Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Bite into a stack sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams of protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises. Just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
What's up? It's part 3 of Dodge. This time we're talking about Hellcats. We're talking about Lee Iacocca. We're talking about
fast trucks. We're talking about EV chargers. We're
talking about front-wheel drive Econo boxes.
We're also talking about Tim Tams. So let's get into it. Since the Dodge brothers launched their car company, it has seen plenty of ups and downs. From a half dozen wars to a gas crisis to Kelsey Grammer flipping a Viper, the brand has seen it all. But in Dodge's swan song for the internal combustion Boulevard bruising Challenger, they went as high as possible. Near dusk, a chopper flew across the Nevada desert carrying the penultimate Challenger at the end of a long cable. The helicopter, accompanied by a cheering crowd of diehard Dodge fans, automotive journalists, and company executives, lowered the last of the ice-powered muscle cars down the strip at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. But this wasn't any regular Challenger. Anyone who was close enough could see the ultra-wide rear tires and the parachute poking out the back. This was the penultimate creation of those gas-guzzling maniacs at SRT Labs. The 2023 Challenger SRT Demon 170 rolled off the platform and right into the history books. This dressed-for-the-dragstrip coupe is based on the last-gen super-powered Hellcat motor, but the 717 promised horsepower were far in the distance. By upgrading almost everything in the engine bay, including beefing up the supercharger, this demon made an absolutely insane 1,025 horsepower and 945 pounds of torque. There would never be another Dodge like it. Dodge had come full circle, from the 3035, which bested the Model T, to the 426 Hemi Charger, which had bested the rest during the muscle car era, to the Little Red Express, which bested the Corvette in 1978. The brand couldn't help but push the limits while everyone else towed the line. So, why did Dodge build a truck that was faster than a Corvette? What did the guy responsible for the Mustang have to do with steering the Dodge Motor ship back towards profitability? And how did a car company known for pushing the limits way past the breaking point deal with the impending death of the internal combustion engine? This week on Past Gas, the final chapter in our Dodge trilogy.
It ends here!
I just imagine that Dodge, like the spectacle of the Demon 170 being lowered. Like, I just see like Idiocracy in my head. A bunch of Dodge guys.
It would have been cooler if they launched a parachute midair.
Welcome back to Past Gas, everybody. This is part 3 of our Dodge trilogy, as I mentioned. We're going to be talking all the way from, let's see here, the 70s to today and perhaps beyond, question mark. I've got some notes in my notebook here. My name is Nolan Sykes. If this is your first time listening to Past Gas, welcome. You should maybe listen to the first two episodes, but if you don't want to, if you're manning some heavy machinery on your shift right now and you can't change what you're listening to, welcome. We'll catch you up a little bit. How about that? Yeah, this has been a really fun one so far. I was just thinking about last week how much I got fired up over the old NASCAR stuff. That was
great. It still lives in my head when you're like, whoa!
I love this shit so much! Yeah.
Those other voices you hear across me, we got Justin Freeman.
Yo, I'm on a podcast.
And Joe Weber.
I mean, I can't top that. I'm not even going to try.
That was pretty good.
Literally the perfect intro.
Yes.
I'm on a podcast. Let's get into our conclusion of the Dodge story. Let's do it. During the late 70s, the car industry... Hold on. Let's back up a little bit for that person on the heavy machinery if they haven't listened to the previous episode. So we talked about Dodge's beginnings under the Dodge brothers in the early 1900s, how they worked with Henry Ford. Yep. And in the last episode, we mostly talked about Dodge getting their feet wet in NASCAR, building cars like the Charger Daytona, perhaps using Chrysler rocket scientists to help shape that car and get the aerodynamics just right. That car was eventually banned from NASCAR competition. I don't know if we actually talked about that necessarily. It wasn't outright banned completely. They could still run the Daytona body shape. It just had to have a smaller motor. I think it was limited to 350 or maybe even smaller. I think it ran a 313 block. So it was still very aerodynamic, but just a lot less powerful than the other cars on the
grid. NASCAR dudes saw the Dodge Daytona break the record at Talladega, and that's when they started changing the rules, because they were like,
it was after one season, and then they got totally nerfed. And you know, Dodge being one of the smaller companies of the big three, there's like, you know, kind of like this lingering question of like, well, was NASCAR working with Ford and Chevy? Did they did the other two bigger companies complain more?
They also had cars banned, though, like the Mercury. There's a Mercury NASCAR that they had to dial back.
It was basically if it had like aerodynamic elements, like a pointy nose or a wing, you had to run a smaller engine. And if you just had a big brick car that didn't have any aero considerations, you could still run as big a motor as you want. So we talked about that last week. The gas crisis hit mid-70s, really messed things up. And now Dodge finds itself in dire straits trying to rebuild during and after the gas crisis, and that's where we're going to pick up right now.
Yeah, so trick trucks are already a thing. Now there's factory trick trucks, and they started coming out with the Dodge Warlock, which was like, you know, had special interior. It had a decal set.
We're talking about right now?
This was last week, but now we're going to get even more into the trick truck scene.
Gotcha. Okay. Because there is a Warlock you could have bought a couple years ago still.
That's a throwback.
Yeah.
But this is part of the adult toys line of trick trucks that came from the factory.
Where do you buy this truck?
This adult toy trick truck.
You go to your local Dodge dealership. Yeah,
you gotta go to that place with no windows.
Remember in college, my roommate was like, hey, let's go for a run. And I was like, okay, cool. And we ran from our apartment in the valley all the way down Reseda Boulevard. Like the furthest I'd ever run at that point to an adult store for some reason. He's like, I just want to check it out. And I was like, all right, dude. And then
someone to come with.
Yeah. And we like ran over there. I was like, why did we run over? I'm
sweaty guys running into an adult store.
Sweaty ass dudes walking into an adult store in the valley.
Wow.
Yeah, super weird.
Let's jump into Dodge Part 3.
Did you go part in? Two
that's, I definitely went in. But I don't like that. But. There's a part two to that story, but I don't think it's appropriate for the air, so I will tell you guys privately. All right.
Yay.
So during the late 70s, the car industry in the United States was plain bleak. Everything had either gotten smaller or slower, and there's no end to the diminutive car culture in sight. Tiny Toyotas were on the rise, but they weren't quite cool yet. While the AE86 was just starting to be produced, it wouldn't be seen by any American buyers for years to come.
And it wouldn't be a cult classic for a while because it was just a Corolla.
Yeah. Yep.
I found out that my parents owned a Notchback AE86.
Oh, what?
Yeah, the AE. I think the 85 is what it was called. Yeah, they got it from my aunt, and they drove a
Hachiroku.
Hachiroku for a little, not necessarily Hachiroku, but I was like, why didn't you hold on to that?
Yeah.
Anyway, it also didn't help that the catalytic converters that weren't quite refined yet were getting welded into every exhaust system coming out of Detroit, severely hampering performance. It's not really the case anymore, but it was back then.
Speaking of cats, I have a funny story. Yeah. My truck has had a catalytic converter check engine light since I fixed all the O2 sensors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on this road trip recently. I went from LA to Phoenix to Sedona, Flagstaff, Grand Canyon, and then backwards.
That's fun.
I accidentally put 91 in my truck because the hose kind of hit the button for me. Uh-huh. I was just like, I'm in Arizona. It's way cheaper. Yeah. Why not? I'd say a couple hundred miles later, check engine light goes off.
Really?
I'm like, what?
Turned off?
It just cut off. Whoa. I was like, wait, that was telling me my cat was bad. Mm-hmm. And I was just ignoring it.
I wonder if there's like other things in that 91 that like
cleaned it.
Cleaned it out.
I mean, I put Cataclean in, I put Seafoam in, I put all kinds of stuff in. It just disappeared.
Weird. Interesting.
Yeah, and then I passed 300,000 miles. So
hell yeah.
Maybe congrats. The truck said, eh, screw it.
Is that the 1UZ? FE? Yeah,
it's a 2UZ.
2UZ, okay. Because I know the, whatever engine that Chloe has in her Lexus, that wants 91,
I think. That's the 1UZ.
Yeah, 1UZ.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero croissant and the 3-gram net carb Hero pan au chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread, see nutrition facts on hero.co.
Now back to the show.
So, ever since the sunset of the muscle car wars, Dodge Idea Guys had been noodling around the idea of building trick trucks. They wanted to put together radical trucks that pushed visual buttons and sell them at dealerships, not in some custom truck shop, as was custom for the time. They'd seen the dollars rolling in aftermarket shops and wanted a piece of it for themselves. By 1976, Dodge had begun offering the Warlock, a short wheelbase step-side pickup that looked badass and had multiple big block engine options. In 1978, Dodge dropped the Adult Toys ad campaign on the public.
Adult Toys ad campaign.
It was a branding push that created a series of awesome-looking trucks that didn't always need to have awesome 0 to 60 times.
It's on par for them to call it that after calling things like the Scat Pack. Mm-hmm. You know, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Dodge Adult Toys. A new set of adult toys from Dodge.
What would you say adult toys are now in the automotive space?
Like the Myers Manx 2.0?
Mm. I was thinking Can-Ams.
I was going to say.
Side by side.
Oh,
side
yeah.
Side
for side sure. By,
absolutely. Yeah. Because you could just buy one of those things and just enter a race and
100%
just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
they're crazy. Now most states have made them street legal. So
what?
Genuine adult toys. These adult toy trucks were offered in fun colors like bright canyon red, medium green,
wow,
sunfire metallic, yes, citron green metallic, or sunrise orange.
Two greens.
Yeah.
The exterior was also dripping with color splashes and graphics yanked straight from the 70s SoCal truck scene. The interior is tweaked to match by ditching the bench seats and putting bucket seats into the trucks, making them feel more car-like. The beds were outfitted with oak sideboards that were finished in a high gloss, and wide-set wheels and fat tires were stuffed under the wheel wells. This sounds sick as hell,
yeah,
dude.
Does.
No performance upgrades were offered on these trucks, but that wasn't the point of the whole campaign. Dodge and their customers didn't care if the oomph wasn't there. Besides, this was the peak malaise era, and all the other cars and trucks were slow as hell too, so why not make something that looked amazing instead? This has taken the personal luxury concept of the mid-70s to a different consumer base, and the sales showed that it worked.
Last week we talked about the Charger becoming a personal luxury vehicle.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it looked pretty plush.
It looked pretty cool.
It was not a great car by any means.
I mean, if you're gonna be slow and wheezy, at least look good doing it. You know?
But Dodge being Dodge had to push it as far as they could. They had one more muscly trick up their sleeves in the hopes that they'd keep another generation of tinkerers and speed seekers on the hook.
That's where you keep your muscles anyways, your sleeves.
Dodge studied the Clean Air Act of 1970, going through it with a fine-tooth comb. This act reduced everything cars could do, and they didn't like that. Dodge's lawyers had found a loophole in the legislation that quickly went from loophole-shaped to truck-shaped at the Detroit factory. Congress had goofed up and basically forced Dodge to take advantage of the legislation mistake signed by Nixon. Those fuel standards that ruined the Corvette and Charger didn't apply to light trucks, aka any truck up to 8,500 pounds and had a payload capacity of at least 4,000.
Sounds like that same rule today.
Well, yeah. We could talk about that. They started with the D-150, the grandfather of the Ram 1500, and shoved a 360 cubic inch police motor under the hood, which made 225 horse.
This thing got a cop motor in it.
They added some trick graphics, wood paneling, and cartoonish smokestacks sticking out of the top of it. This thing looked awesome.
For a gas motor?
That's cool. But more importantly, the police motor pushed the truck from 0 to 60 in 7.5 seconds, making it the fastest of any production car at the time. It was faster than the Corvette, a Mustang, or anything else available in the U.S.
You ever heard of a gas truck with stacks? That actually sounds pretty good. I don't know why more people don't do it.
The truck was a hit with the public. The limited run of 2,000 was expanded to 5,000 units, but Congress was allergic to anyone having any fun. Ooh, a libertarian riding this one. And they closed the loophole in 1979, which killed any future the Little Red Express had. I'm kidding.
There's a Little Red Express. I don't know if it's like a real one or a replica, but it drives around Inglewood.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
The death of the Little Red Express put the final nail in the coffin of the fun zone that was Dodge at the time. Disco was dead. It was time to grow up and start making some money again. Greed is good, baby. It's the 80s. Time to grab a briefcase and head into the boardroom because one of the penultimate businessmen in history was walking into Chrysler Town.
He's wearing brown.
Lee Iacocca arrived at Chrysler HQ as they were in the process of releasing the subcompact Dodge Omni and Plymouth Horizon. The boxy cars that were essentially Gen 1 VW GTIs became an instant hit and sold hundreds of thousands of units in their debut year. This painted a very clear picture for Iacocca about what the public wanted. They didn't reject little rides, they embraced them. Iacocca had made a name for himself at Ford, where he'd been key in developing the boomer bait car, now known as the Ford Mustang.
Yeah, boomer bait.
Boomer bait.
Boomer bait.
He'd worked with Boomer bait. Oh, Paul Sr. is saying Boomer it.
Boomer bait.
Iacocca had worked with Carroll Shelby on the project, and the Mustang was an instant hit. It still is a huge hit.
Still.
But Iacocca didn't ride that single accomplishment to fame. He had brought the idea of the Ford Escort to the table and drove Ford straight to the $2 billion profit in 1978, which was the same year that Henry Ford the Deuce felt so threatened by his success that he canned him.
Ego, baby.
Ego.
Ego. Gotta love it.
Ego and greed. Best two things in the world.
Yeah.
Iacocca had gone over the books and knew that Chrysler would go belly up by 1980 if he didn't get some cash in that piggy bank.
Who's today's Lee Iacocca?
Well, Mary Barra. I mean, like, oh, yeah. I would say that the brand's GM's reputation is definitely like turned around in the years that since she's taken over. Like, she, according to the internet, she is GM CEO by 2014. But I mean, you know, 10 years ago, people would still be talking about how like GM interiors are shit and like their cars are kind of crummy and whatever. And I feel like
better.
They're a lot better now. Yeah. So I think I would put her on that.
The Chevy.
I would put her name into that hat.
Sure. Throw it in a hat. Although the Chevy booth at the LA Auto Show is a little underwhelming.
It's okay, man. Enthusiasts don't sell cars.
Yeah. Also the LA Auto Show. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lee Iacocca went to Congress in 1979 and put out his begging hat looking for a large infusion of money for the brand.
Hmm.
Congress had some stipulations about cost cutting and streamlining, but eventually they coughed up $1.5 billion to keep the company afloat.
Dang.
Iacocca had bought Chrysler some life.
All right, guys, hear me out. We take Donut to Congress.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
look, we're not failing.
But like this is important. People need to understand cars.
Yeah.
Right. So right.
Well, I don't understand like
how do we sell
the too big to fail format for companies like this is kind of infuriating because they can privatize the profits, mm-hmm. but make stuff like this the problem of the public.
Yes.
Where it's like, we have to bail them out, but they can keep all the profit.
Yes.
Once it becomes successful, exactly. That's kind of
doesn't come back to us at all.
Yeah. Anywheres.
That's a whole other podcast.
After sticking the $1.5 million into their bank account, Chrysler got to work on Iacocca's masterpiece, the completely underwhelming 1981 Dodge Aries. The Aries and the Plymouth Reliant were built on Iacocca's first big idea for the company, an all-new, all-encompassing platform called the K-Car. According to Iacocca, the theory was to create a centralized platform and build different models on top of it. But the problem was, when you looked back on the last two decades of car building, there were dozens of different models and hundreds of different options for each of them. Bucket seats, a half dozen engine options, multiple dash configurations, wood siding, electrical versus manual windows, and on and on and on. As Iacocca took the reins, he often talked about how Chrysler's massive number of parts in inventory, coupled with a slew of different versions and options, were the main reason the company was hemorrhaging money. The Aries, in all of its boxy glory, was destined to solve that problem. The K-Cars featured a transversely mounted engine above the front axle, which meant they were all front-wheel drive cars with independent suspension. This was a huge departure from the solid axle, rear-wheel drive unibodies of the 1970s. The platform debuted amidst the early 80s recession, just in time to cut costs and save everyone a ton of money. The efficient and cheap cars sold like mattresses on President's Day.
Nice.
The only thing we celebrate on President's Day.
Mattresses.
They should have mattress sales on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Well, usually you want your mattress.
You want it the day after.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
You either want it the day after.
In January.
Yeah. End of January. You want to break it in time for that's a good Valentine's
idea.
Day.
Dude.
This is business.
The platform's...
I'm sorry. So stupid.
The platform started with two simple cars, then expanded until there were more than 50 different models utilizing the platform, saving Chrysler billions of dollars.
50 models?
50 models, Nolan.
Oh my God.
On top of
that, I heard you wrong.
My goodness.
50. Yeah, I do have a stuffed nose, so it might have sounded like 15, but not.
50. Good Lord.
On top of sharing the underpinnings, Iacocca pushed engineers to develop common parts that wouldn't be easily visible to customers, like steering columns, radio mounts, AC units, window motors, and many parts like that. This also helped junkyard pickers down the line who aimed to keep their K-Cars running for decades to come. The profitability of the K-Car was incredible. In 1980, Chrysler posted a profit of $10 million, which is $38 million. In 2023 bucks, not 2034 bucks for some reason, which is the first profit the company had made in several years.
Oh.
4 years later, New York Times said, not only did K-Cars almost... You want to do a voice? You never get to do voices.
here, let me try this new voice, character out.
So here we go.
Okay.
4 years later, the New York Times said...
Not only did K-Cars almost single-handedly save Chrysler from certain death, they also provided the company with a vehicle that could be stretched, smoothed, poked, chopped, and trimmed to create almost a dozen different models. Did that sound like a New York newspaper guy?
Yeah.
Cool.
Give me a slice.
Sounds like a
dollar slice.
Nolan's Blue Steel versus Magnum.
What are you talking about? Totally different guy. Totally different character.
Totally different faces.
Yeah.
Iacocca had done the unthinkable and saved the day. He was heralded as a genius, books were written about him, and he graced not only the cover of every financial magazine, but he also put himself in Chrysler commercials as the company spokesman.
That's right.
But they weren't just pumping out company-saving econo-boxes that the American public were begging for. Dodge was still being Dodge.
Oh, what does that mean?
Uh-oh.
Dodge will be Dodge. In 1983, through a partnership with Carroll Shelby, Dodge released the Dodge Shelby Charger. Iacocca, an intense penny pincher and inefficiency slasher, still had a soft spot for cool cars. When Iacocca was president of Ford, he'd brought Kelby Sherrill.
Kelby Sherrill.
Kelby Sherrill. Hi, I'm Caribou Sherbull.
Sounds like Caribou Sherbull.
It's a Rick and Morty character.
Performance is my business.
I'm also incredibly hungry right now. But
there's a bunch of pie in the kitchen.
I know.
Oh, yeah, today we're having our pie bake off in the office.
We're going to have a sugar attack.
When Iacocca was president of Ford, he'd brought Carroll Shelby to Detroit to work on his mid-60s top secret weapon, the Mustang. And it worked out pretty well for them, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'd say.
Nah.
Ever eager to replay the hits, in 1983, Iacocca rang up the man in the black hat and put him to work on what he'd hoped was another amazing car.
Unfortunately, he had the wrong number. Hello, this is Caribou Shelby.
Caribou Shelby, the man in the white hat.
Cheryl Kelby. How may I be of assistance?
Could you make us some white chicken chili?
Oh.
So he brought Carroll Shelby in. Shelby got to work, and in a mere 90 days, he created an entirely new version of the iconic Charger.
Whoa.
The Dodge
in just
Shelby.
Just 90 days.
Sounds very good. Like it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. 90 days is more than enough time.
Yeah.
The Dodge Shelby Charger kind of looked like an early 80s Mustang. It kind of performed like one too. This Dodge Shelby Charger ran a 16-second quarter mile and did 0 to 60 in 7.6 seconds, numbers that were very close to the 1978 Dodge Lowrider Express. But the truck got 13 miles per gallon, and Shelby's creation posted 22 miles per gallon efficiency with the same performance.
Whoa.
It was a win-win for Americans feeling the crunch at the pump. The Camaro Z28 and Mustang GT ran the same numbers, but they also ran 13 to 15 miles per gallon.
That's impressive.
Is it?
No, I meant like that the Daytona
is
still that much better.
But as Iacocca had seen with the K car, performance one-offs weren't going to save the company. He started digging through past projects and uncovered something that he knew would be very special.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Looking for your next thrifting experience? Check out the new Goodwill Columbus location in Westerville. Our new store is full of the latest secondhand selections with options rotating daily. From warm weather clothes to home decor, you may find your new favorite items just in time for spring. Each purchase helps us create opportunities throughout Central Ohio. It's shopping that looks good, feels good, and does good. Come shop at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises. Just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero croissant and the 3-gram net carb Hero pan au chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread see nutrition facts on hero.co.
Now back to the show.
Back in the 70s, Dodge engineers started tinkering with a passenger van and had found that they could make more room inside by tossing in a transverse engine and making it front-wheel drive. The idea was a distant prototype of what would eventually become the unassuming Dodge Caravan. It was like nothing anyone had ever seen before. The Caravan could fit into a normal home garage and get a whole family of 5 soccer players to practice Saturday morning without guzzling gas like the old Dodge B-Series Ram vans that packed 440 cubic inch V8s. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was huge. How do you get that in a van? Is it like cab over van?
No, I mean, you can see it on our van outside. Like the engine is like halfway into the driver compartment.
Yeah, transmission tunnel gets real hot.
Exactly.
The all-new minivan was a huge hit. Auto journos lauded it as revolutionary, and in Canada, they even marketed it as the Chrysler Magic Wagon.
So Dodge came up with the minivan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They came up with fast trucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else?
having sick ass
aerodynamics in NASCAR.
Yes. Yeah. Having really cool promo videos talking about the Brotherhood. they came up with that.
No, but we are making light of it, but
yeah, they, no, but right. Like they came out with a lot of stuff that in some ways saved the world, you know, making things more efficient, had the right people in the right places, you know, they helped Ford become what Ford is.
Yeah.
And then later on, someone from Ford helped them become even better.
And they did all this for some guy in an F-150 to put Calvin pissing on
a Ram logo.
Yeah. On Ram logo.
Dude, that's a very good insight, Justin.
Yeah. Dodge is important. We need to save it.
Yeah. Now I agree with Congress bailing them out. So
government.
Out of the gate in 1984, 200,000 units were sold of the Dodge Caravan. In 1985, they moved 250,000, and by the late 80s, they were selling almost 450,000 a year.
Wow. Ooh. Sound like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Didn't a bunch of manufacturers like borrow the Dodge Caravan and just kind of reskin it?
Yeah. Like the Ford Windstar, the Previa?
No, I don't think
what do you mean
Previa.
Reskinning? You mean like ripping off?
Kind of like relicensing, yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, that's not what I'm...
Like, because I had a Nissan Quest growing up. And I'm pretty sure Mercury had the same thing. And Ford had the same thing.
Nissan Quest.
Yeah, the original Nissan Quest.
The Quest is a lot. The Mercury and the Quest are the same car.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's just a licensing kind of.
Rebadging.
Rebadge. Co-developing. Yeah, I don't know about the Caravan, though.
While the Caravan didn't sit on the K-Car platform, it used almost all the same parts. Turn signal, stocks, radios, knobs, handles, all of it came straight out of the Iacocca K-Car bins. That reusing of pieces pushed Chrysler's profitability even further. In 1987, the company posted a record profit of $1.7
billion,
$200 million more than what they were bailed out for.
In just 1 year.
Damn. Which,
this was also a massive turnaround from just a decade before when Iacocca headed to Congress with his hands out and his pockets empty.
What year did Legos come out?
Like the 50s?
Yeah.
He was just like, all right, there are these toys.
My kids, they love these toys.
Everything clicks together.
All right.
So by the end of the 80s, every major car manufacturer was offering a minivan of their own.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 12:45 right now. I'm now realizing I last ate at 8:30. Mm-hmm. Not that long, to be honest, but a little while. Joe, what do you say we do a little rodent snack?
Yeah, I think we took a little break in our road trip right now.
All right. It's
time to bust open. All right.
Open that drawer up.
Let's see what we got here.
Oh, we have Tim a Tams.
You want to read that?
Sure. Oh, this is
awesome. If you've been listening, I've been telling you our secret P.O. box where you can send snacks. Someone actually did send us snacks, and so we're going to read their note right now.
All right. Yes. So, hey guys, I've been a longtime donut watcher and listener, YouTube, Pass Gas, Big 3, DRS even. Hey, thank you. I love listening to you guys on road trips, so I totally relate to wanting to find good road trip snacks. Here are some unique ones I learned about while living in the UK that I really enjoyed. We got Tim Tams, which are Australian biscuits, Terry's Chocolate Orange, which is from France, nice, and Hobnobs, which are UK biscuits. Hobnobs, the most British sounding thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited to hear which ones y'all like the most. Y'all,
where are you from?
Where are you from? Hope you have a good day. And P.S. Nolan has some based opinions. Wow. I'm so based.
all right.
Renee. Thank you, Renee, for sending over. We've got the Tim Tams out on the table right now.
Ooh.
I've had Tim Tams before.
Classic.
I don't know
Dusty
why.
These are
classic dark.
We'll be checking out the Terry's chocolate, which is from France. Terry sounds like some guy made it in like his backyard. And Hobnobs later on a different episode. But now we're going to hear the Tim Tams.
Tim Tams.
Ooh, these look good.
Dark chocolate. Mm.
Less than 200 calories for
so
two cookies.
So these are a chocolate-covered wafer with chocolate in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Very good. I could eat this entire package right now, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. Mm.
I'm not even a chocolate lover.
I'm a big chocolate head. This is the classic dark flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give us another round. Yeah, boy.
Definitely helping with the blood sugar.
That was delicious. Those are great. 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tim Tam, huge fan. I don't even like chocolate, and it made me love chocolate. So I'm going to give it 8.1.
Very granular with the scoring. I like that. Justin.
I'm going to give it a 9.7.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Very good. Very delicious.
Good stuff. Wow.
Super good.
Not too messy. Perfect for the car.
No crumbs everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Mm. So good. Tasty. And I'm assuming reasonably priced.
The best part, you know how sometimes you touch chocolate stuff and it just sticks to your fingers?
Yeah.
Didn't do that.
Yeah, they put some in there. Mm.
So good.
I wanted to talk, before we move on from this K-car section, we actually had a K-car, a Chrysler K-car, when I was a kid. Ooh. My dad had bought a Dodge Spirit at an auction when I was like
Dodge
9
Spirit.
Or 10. It's the most boring looking car you've ever seen. But we had that for
a that.
Maybe not 10. He had that for a few years.
Yeah, it's pretty boring.
I want to say
it's like a Diamante.
From like 2001, he bought it because he had started his business. And then a month later, 9/11 happened. And then he bought that car. So it was like 2001 to 2004, he had this thing. I kind of wish he still had it, to be honest. I would love to drive a little junky K car around as like a little little beater daily.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a pretty sick idea for a race series where we do Americana front wheel drive only. Mm.
I think the only problem would be finding these cars. I think a lot of K cars taken out by Cash for Cars back in 2009.
I'm thinking more of like early 2000s, but dude, like why not allow this?
Turbo RT Dodge Spirit makes 224 horsepower. Comes in at 5-speed.
I wonder if those are out there.
Garrett turbocharger. Hell yeah. Oh, it's designed by Lotus too.
Oh.
The suspension.
One of these sold this year on Bring a Trailer. A 50,000 mile Dodge Spirit RT, Joe.
Weirdly enough, the engine was designed by Lotus.
Do you want to guess how much one of these went for
on Bring a Trailer?
50,000 miles. It's really clean. It looks great. This
how many years ago?
This was like a month and a half ago.
7,200.
Justin?
I say 15.
$18,500.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I know my shitty cars.
Yeah, you've
never even heard
man.
Of this thing.
That's so funny. As the modest minivan 80s turned into the 1990s, automotive on-brand electronics brought performance to life and gas got cheaper. At this point, muscle cars were starting to show their age and prices were starting to climb. So, Dodge got back to making fun cars again.
Hell yeah, brother.
What?
I'm ultra MIFCA. Making fun cars again.
That's a tattoo. MIFCA.
starting back in 19...
What does that mean?
Don't you worry about it, baby.
Starting back in 1989, a group of 85 engineers went to the Chrysler-owned Lamborghini and asked them to lend a hand in building an all-aluminum V10 block for their secret project called... White Mule.
Oh, God, what a
Iacocca,
name.
Though he loved a fast car, was skeptical of the $70 million needed to develop the prototype, which would eventually morph into the Dodge Viper. By 1999, the engine was ready, and Iacocca was finally on board. He brought back Carroll Shelby and shoved him behind the seat of the Viper to debut the car as the 1991 Indianapolis 500 pace car. The first-gen Viper produced 400 horsepower from its snarling V10, just 200 horsepower shy of the NASCAR vehicles trailing behind it. The year before, an anemic Chevy Beretta was the pace car. And before that, a V6 turbocharged Trans Am. So the bar wasn't set too high. Automotive journalists praised the Viper for being an all-out street monster, but lightly complained about the stiff ride and unrefined features, pretty much exactly what was said about muscle cars of the 60s, which it was crafted in the image of, more specifically, the Shelby Cobra, hence the name Viper. There's a lot of other factoids about this car that we kind of glazed over just now. But if you'd like to learn more, we did a whole episode on the development of the Viper.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite episodes. I was deep in the freaking Viper.
You're drinking that Viper Kool-Aid.
I was drinking Viper Venom. No, but that same, like around that same time, we had filmed every shot with the Viper video. Yeah. So that's a really good one. Very detailed, very fun episode. I mean, my favorite part about this is like I said, 85 engineers worked on this car. They did it in a very, very short time frame.
For sure.
And, you know, the shortcomings and, like, lack of refinement in the car really are what give it its character. I mean, dude, there's cars like Nissan GTR, Dodge Viper, where you can just feel that it's meant to be at the track somewhere. It's not like a road car made to be good on the track. It's a true track car made to just be as... give you just as much comfort as you need on the road. And I think it's an important distinction. I love the Viper Gen 1 Viper. I would love to find one and make a, just a, even if it's a ratty one, cause I want a track car of this and they're just so good.
So
they're so good. By 1994, Dodge was back to their aggressive styling and performance first mentality because of the cars like the Viper. The Viper set the pace for this. Nothing in the lineup was safe from getting a full facelift and a new engine. The flagship pickup Dodge was selling, the Ram, had been stagnant and boxy-looking since its unveiling in 1980. Even though you could pack a serious engine on the hood, it was still a brick. That changed dramatically when Dodge launched the entirely overhauled Ram truck. Engineers were tasked with improving the ride, handling, comfort, convenience, safety, storage, hauling capabilities, and towing capabilities. Pretty much the whole damn truck. And they had to make it look awesome, too. Engineers jokingly called the prototype the Louisville Slugger. It boasted a modular platform that set the stage for larger trucks and vans while giving passengers plenty of room to stretch out.
I don't really understand that joke. Is that an engineer joke that I just don't get? Smooth? Smooth and kind of rounded?
Maybe. Louisville. Louisville Slugger.
Louisville.
The all-new front end was reminiscent of a semi and gave dudes... the masculine, touchy-feely emotions that made them they're badass-looking trucks, yes. Short to say. It was burly and tough-looking, performed just like it looked on and off-road. These are the Gen 1 Rams we're talking about.
Yeah.
Dodge succeeded in their goals, and Motor Trend awarded the 1994 Ram Truck of the Year, and it has won the title 7 more times since then. Sales went from around 100,000 trucks in 93 to 230K the next year and 410 units in 1995. The movie Twister even featured the Ram as its big hero car. That's like one of the sickest freaking movie cars ever. Dodge had another hit on their hands. And while Iacocca had retired before the Ram's facelift, he was no doubt cheering on the massive success from his 11,000 square foot Tuscan style mansion in Bel Air.
Damn, the guy's got good taste.
Wow.
Dodge was so overhaul happy, they started looking around at the other cars they could work their magic with. The chosen subject was the Dodge Neon. While it was a totally new model, it was clearly a descendant of the Dodge Colt and the Dodge Shadow. The engineers crafted a petite coupe and sedan that had a smile for a grill and big, buggy eyes like a second-generation WRX. And unlike other efficient compact sedans, I'm not like other efficient compact sedans. You could get a stick, made it to a 230-horsepower turbo four-cylinder, a huge departure from other low horsepower compacts. I remember when I first started at Donut, I was like, "That I'm going to get one of these things."
You were obsessed with the SRT4.
I was obsessed.
Yeah.
And
I don't think you would have had a good time if you actually would have gotten
maybe
one.
Maybe not, but I still kind of want one, but I feel they're getting harder and harder to find.
Yeah.
In good condition.
You need a Dodge Caliber SRT4 now.
No, anything but that. Oh my God. No.
I saw a Caltrans car today that was a Dodge Nitro.
What?
The super boxy, like,
yeah, it looks like a Bebop from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to me, just like a
big,
like,
rectangle.
Unnecessarily.
It's like they took the Honda Element and was just like, how do we dodgify this?
Yeah, dude. Exactly.
Oh my God,
that's exactly what it is. So, as the 90s waned and the 2000s delivered boomers with disposable income, Chrysler was ready to summon up the spirit of their muscle car memories and part them from the pesky cash lingering in their bank accounts. Chrysler brought in a West Coast designer named Michael Castiglione, who took a good hard look at a 1970 Challenger and then got to work. He designed the car to reflect the passion of the original Challenger, something that sports cars hadn't done since the 70s. At the 2006 North American International Automobile Show, Dodge debuted their Challenger concept painted in orange pearl. The car represented the uncanny valley, but in a good way. The slopes and lines of the car were familiar, even if it was still a very different car from anything they'd seen in decades at the auto show. In classic Dodge fashion, they reused the chassis of the Dodge Magnum, the earlier Charger, and the Chrysler 300, but they had chopped out 4 inches from the wheelbase.
Huh.
It was hard to believe and kind of impressive that the retro Challenger managed to be not only longer and wider than the OG Challenger, it also weighed 1,400 pounds more. Everyone lost their minds over the prototype. Drooling test drivers and auto journals begged Dodge to fire up the production line and start cranking out some old-looking new Challengers. So they did.
Fired up.
Fired up.
Fired up. Fire that production line up. I'm going to die of a coronary. I want to drive it first. I can't miss this.
I'm missing my daughter's christening for this. For the first year, Dodge only released a high-performance SRT8 model.
That's right, with a 6.1 Hemi.
It did. It hid a 6.1-liter Hemi under the massive hood that cranked out 425 horsepower.
Nice, dude.
That's great for 2006.
Oh, it's killer. Yeah.
And while it was only available in automatic, the Challenger would run a 0-60 time in 4.7 seconds and blasted a quarter mile in a hair over 13.
Okay.
Those low numbers were important because they stomped the Mustang GT's times.
Yeah, I mean, for reference, my 2006 Mustang, the 4.6,
yeah.
I can't, it cannot break 14 seconds at the quarter mile, at least on street tires. Yeah. So,
the retro Challenger had 20-inch wheels and four-piston Brembo brakes with suspension designed by the German side of Daimler Chrysler Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, because you needed those brakes for that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big old hog. The ride was stiff enough to perform, but plush enough to cruise. It was the best of both worlds, and the reviews reflected that. The car offered all the benefits of real old-school muscle cars without the drawbacks like no AC, smelling like gas all the time, and ride so stiff you can't hold a cup of coffee.
I don't need coffee. I've got octane.
The 6,400 units Dodge pumped out for their initial run were sold out instantly.
Wow, yeah, I believe it. It was a cool-looking car. And I remember at the time, like, being very, just, how old was I? It was 2008, so 15. I mean, yeah, I was like, it was in Need for Speed Carbon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the car I chose.
But it's funny, looking, seeing them on the road nowadays, like the Gen 1.
I love them still. I think they look amazing.
I think they look, like, you can see remnants of, like, the Stratus. And
what? You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that era of Dodge right before that, mm-hmm. when you had like the Sebring convertible.
The Stealth.
Yeah. It's like mm-hmm. I see, especially in the back.
Yeah.
I see remnants of it.
My favorite on Need for Speed Carbon was pulling like the intro scene before a race and then just the Chargers just... Or the Challengers just towering mm-hmm. over yeah. all the other cars. Yeah. Couldn't even yeah. see. The camera couldn't even frame it properly.
I think it still holds up. That Gen 1. I mean, I just love the grill design, how it still had the single ring in yeah. there. Like the later ones have the dual rings and stuff. And same thing with the taillights, like the single light bar in the back.
Yeah.
I think it's held up really well. Just beautiful, dare I say, beautiful car. I love yeah. it.
The next year in 2009, Dodge released the full lineup of Challengers. There were 250 horsepower six cylinders and Tremec six speeds, all the options and special editions anyone could ever want, and a color palette that would have impressed the hippiest of Haight-Ashbury van dwellers.
I got to drive I was probably 18, but my parents went to go buy a Mazda CX-5, and the dealership also sold Dodges.
Oh. Weird.
And because my parents are buying a Mazda, I was like, hey, can I test drive a Challenger? And the guys let me drive this Gen 1 Challenger Scat Pack car with the Tremec 6-speed. And yeah. even though it felt very large, it still also felt very agile. Mm. I wish I... These are great. I mean, they're kind of memes now, the Challenger,
yeah.
I think. But they really are, I think, great cars. They're massive, though. I mean, like, look, they have their drawbacks. And they've been memed for a reason, but I really like them still.
Yeah.
And they are really fun, especially with that Hemi. I don't know if we're going to talk too much about the Hemi itself, the 5.7, that kind of like power 5.7 and 6.1 Hemis that went in these cars. But like, ironically, we're talking about Hemi so much over the past couple episodes.
Yeah.
And no one seems to point out too often that the new Hemi is not really a Hemi at all.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the branding.
It just doesn't have a domed.
It doesn't. It's called a pent roof design. So it's more like a triangle.
Yeah.
It's still somewhat dome like compared to like older designs, but it's not like those.
It's got vaulted ceilings.
fault. It's yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Joe.
Instead of a cathedral.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, the Hemi in my Chrysler, that is a very dome design. Whereas now it's more like, because of efficiency, you know, a lot of cars actually use these pent roof designs. But that got me thinking, like, what other cars out there use a true hemispherical engine? There's not a lot, but the Lamborghini V12 that like went for like 50 years.
That is a Hemi?
That's a Hemi.
Wow.
Porsche's flat six from 1963 to 1999. That's a Hemi.
Oh, wow.
Ford, interestingly enough, most of the four cylinder engines they made in the 80s, those are Hemis.
The 2.3 turbos.
And then when it comes to pent roof stuff that is similar to the Chrysler design, I thought it was really funny that both the 5.7 Hemi, 6.1 Hemi, and the Nissan VQ share a similar pent roof design.
Whoa.
Both those cars are takeover icons.
All of the above.
Both those engines. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Finding that out. And that's my contribution to this episode. See you later. No,
that was great.
Yeah.
It's almost like they can smell it.
There were so many options that buyers felt like each car was individually made for them, which is a great selling point. As the Challenger aged, upgrades arrived in the form of shaker hoods and scat pack badging.
Yep.
So did the competition.
Such a good car. Oh, I want a Challenger scat pack.
The GT500 Mustang was putting down 662 horsepower, while the ZR1 Camaro produced 580 at the time.
Whoa.
That's nuts. The circling shark smelled that blood in the water, and the big, now underpowered Challengers were ready to chomp down on. Dodge engineers dug back in time to look at cars like the Shelby GT350 Paxton and the 1957 Studebaker Golden Hawk Supercharged. The Dodge SRT team started by picking out a number of horsepower for the car. Because the Mustang was in the mid-600s, the new Challenger had to be in the 700-plus range. But not too high, because Chrysler's parent company owned Ferrari, and if the muscle car drifted too far out of its lane, it could affect the sales of supercars.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know if that would ever be equated to competition
not.
With Ferrari.
No, no. That's a different buyer altogether.
707 was
that
chosen.
That Jake Paul probably is buying both cars.
Yeah, for sure. 707 was chosen as the perfect number, and they got to work tearing apart and rebuilding the 6.2-liter Gen 3 Hemi. Engineers bolted on a 2.4-liter twin-screw supercharger that spun up to 11.6 pounds of boost, and the Hellcat was born. And it was insane.
You remember what was this, 2015?
It was crazy.
Everyone was just like, Do you hear about the Hellcat? Did you hear about the Hellcat? 707 horsepower.
I mean, I was definitely in the like the
$60,000 car.
Yeah. I mean, that was probably the height of my like muscle car, like car nerd, Dodge head kind of era in 2015. And this was like the sickest, like, coolest car.
Also, just amazing.
Amazing.
All Joe's such. Also, just amazing marketing.
Yeah.
Like, Hellcat is. A sick
That's
ass
a great name.
Branding for it.
Mm-hmm.
The little badge, the demon. Well, like, oh, this era is really cool.
Buying the little drag pack or whatever.
The crate.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool. The red key. Like, they really knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was funny because it was like this went past just like hobbyists, you know, like you could talk to a lady walking down the road about a Hellcat. And she'd be like, yeah, I heard about this.
Even
this
if
crazy.
You don't know what it is, you've heard it.
You heard about it.
Yeah. So the Hellcat had a quarter mile time of 11.2 seconds and 3.7 second 0 to 60, which bested every other production non-supercar on the market, and it was less than $70,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But per usual, by the second half of the 2010s, the Hellcat competition was already creeping up on it. An upgrade was desperately needed. So this time, engineers didn't bother trying to push a few more horsepower out of the engine. They went truly old school and developed a drag race model, the Dodge Demon, complete with no passenger or back seats.
Well, you could, you could order it like that, but you could also
have a regular car.
Yeah.
It was like a dollar, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
For was that the option. Red Eye before the Demon, or did the Red Eye come after the Demon?
I believe
as
that was
an
after.
After.
Just like,
after.
Hey, you want a middle ground?
Yeah.
Horsepower is boosted to 808, 840 if you dumped 100 octane in the tank.
Yeah. Part of that drag pack. Or the Demon crate was an ECU plug-in, a piggyback basically, that let it run 100 octane.
Mm.
Street legal drag radials were standard with a Demon Crate, and the 0 to 60 time dropped to 2.3 seconds, and a 9.65 quarter mile time was achieved.
Wow.
These numbers weren't just ludicrous. They were far beyond what any normal U.S. manufactured car would put out. The Demon was so fast it was banned in the NHRA street class, which is exactly where it would race if it wasn't a Dodge adult toy.
I mean, they loved to say that in the marketing, and people love to say that about it. But like, all you had to do was throw in a roll bar in there, and it'd be legal again. It was just a speed and safety thing. You just have to run harnesses or whatever.
I think Nolan needs a Dodge adult toy shirt.
Dude, you do.
Dodge this adult toy.
More special editions appeared, and the horsepower creeped higher and higher. Finally, last year, Dodge confronted its own reality and saw the writing on the wall. The internal combustion engine would die one day, so why not send it off in style? They got to work on the ultimate Challenger, a Challenger to end all other Challengers. The 2023 Dodge Challenger SRT Demon 170 was released, and it popped wheelies, needed a drag chute, and had over 1,000 horsepower. For the final installment of the retro muscle car, Dodge didn't worry about supercar sales or anything else. This was the 2023 version of the Little Red Express, a swan song that could never be topped as we all retire our gas-guzzling cars.
I don't know. Again, on the Hellcat thing, like Justin, you were saying about how famous it is and ubiquitous. It's like, I mean, the rappers weren't talking about Dodge until the Hellcat came out. And then, you know, like with the Demon, you know, I think like 21 Savage had one. Did Quavo have one? I think he did. But yeah, I mean, you just see video, like there's a video of 21 like 21. Doing donuts in his Hellcat. Just awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the same way, I want to say, at least in hip hop, like the Escalade became kind of like the status symbol.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah.
I think the Hellcat definitely took that mantle in the 2010s.
Yeah.
You know, TRX, all these huge trucks are now taking over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Diesels, you know, people love their big trucks now.
I mean, it's still special, not special necessarily, but like you see way more Raptors than you do TRXs. And by that virtue, I think that makes the TRX more impressive. The TRX is like also looks way bigger.
Yeah.
Like more it's expensive. Just so too. It is more expensive by a good 20 grand or so. But I don't know. I think Dodge is really good at making they were great at going from a really boring brand in the 80s and 90s and from the Viper onwards, like turning into a brand like, that where you're just like, what the hell?
Like going back to your Wild X.
Yeah.
I'm going back to my old habits. I was good for a while.
We didn't even mention like the SRT10.
The Viper truck. Yeah.
The Viper truck was one like for sale crazy
down on La Brea.
Oh, Sam.
As Dodge rolls towards their 112th anniversary, they've shown that the original spirit of John and Horace Dodge has never faltered. One brother counts the dollars while the other tinkers away. Much like Carroll Shelby and Lee Iacocca, the duality of making money and making smiles as an accelerator pedal is smashed to the floor has stayed alive. Car sales are creeping back after the pandemic, and this summer, production of the all-new electric Dodge muscle cars will begin, and they are expected to sell as fast as the first, second, and third generations of Challengers before them.
You think so?
Maybe. I don't know.
I heard this it's car rev at the LA Auto Show.
The Fratsonic.
And it doesn't need to be that loud. It sounds like a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand.
Well, what I'm excited about this specific Charger is they designed it for both. It's ICE and electric.
With a Hurricane 6 cylinder in it.
You can have either one of them. They can all line up together and you'll just fit in. And I think that's the best way to make something EV because it's just like a setup decision.
I am interested to see how the compromises to be able to put both drivetrains in the car affect how it drives. Because, I mean, there's a reason why. I mean, there are some cars on the market right now that do the same thing. Like, I think the Kia Soul, or sorry, the Hyundai Kona is also available in both.
Yeah.
Kona N, great car, I think.
Yeah, no, it's all three. You can get it in just ICE, you can get it in hybrid, and you can get it in EV.
So, interesting. We'll see. But yeah, man, this was really fun. Looking back at all the story of Dodge really made me appreciate the brand and remember why I liked it so much in the first place. And I feel validated in that.
Good thing you sold that Ford.
Yeah, I know. Now I do have a Ram, so...
Yeah,
it does have some transmission issues, but
we're not going to talk about
that. We're not going to talk about that right now.
Good news! Goodwill Columbus has opened a new store in Westerville. And with a new donation center, it's easier than ever to make a difference in your community. Bring your gently used clothing, furniture, electronics, and more to our donation drop-off. Each donation and purchase supports our mission to provide jobs, free job training, essential services, and more right here in Westerville. Drop your donations off at 60 East Schrock Road or learn more at goodwillcolumbus.org.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.